What are the chances a jobs bill gets through the Senate?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, it's the Morning Open. Hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis. A little later, we'll look at how Congress could get involved in the airline struggle over carry-on bags. First, where's Wall Street? Markets are up right now. The NASDAQ and the S&P up about 0.4%. The Dow adding about 22 points right now at 10,708. European shares higher right now, anywhere from 0.5% to 1%. And in Asia, markets gained even more than that, 2% for Chinese shares today. We got word this morning that the price of things, the wholesale price for things produced or manufactured in this country, fell by 0.6%. That's the biggest drop since last July. And when more volatile costs, such as energy and food prices, are taken out, the nation's core producer price index for February rose ever so slightly. Analysts say that means inflation isn't a concern right now. We're going to talk about it with Richard DeKayser. He's president of Woodley Park Research, with us live this morning from Washington. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
So the Federal Reserve continues to tell us that the economy's not running on all cylinders. I mean, is today's report any justification for the Fed leaving interest rates alone?
Well, I think it does. I think it substantiates their decisions. They told us yesterday that they were going to keep interest rates exceptionally low for an extended period of time, specifically citing low inflation, low inflationary expectations, and slack resource capacity. So this is consistent with that view. Typically, inflation doesn't bottom out until a year or two after a recession has ended. And I think this confirms that they've got some time to wait before raising rates.
Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke is expected to tell the House today financial reform should include greater Fed oversight of the banks, Richard. I mean, no surprise there, but do you think he has a point?
I think he's got a half a point. In his testimony, he went to great lengths to talk about all the insights that they've gleaned from regulating banks and the conduct of monetary policy, and especially in dealing with the crisis and its aftermath. What he didn't mention, however, is it's that intimacy with banks that also colored Fed behavior into the crisis. And the general consensus is that they could have been a little bit more attuned to risks as they were emerging. They weren't, and that same intimacy may have, like a double-edged sword, hurt on the downside.
I talked about Bernanke speaking to the House today. In the Senate, the debate has begun on a jobs bill, a vote coming soon. And hang on just a second, Richard, because we're talking about this Democratic plan that offers tax breaks for businesses that hire unemployed workers. And Marketplace's John Dimsdale joins us from Washington live as well. Good morning, John.
Hi, Steve.
How much money are we talking about with this plan?
Well, this has a little less than $20 billion going to businesses that give laid-off workers a job. Those employers wouldn't have to pay the usual 6% Social Security tax for the new workers they hire through the end of the year.
And what's the thinking behind that one tax break?
Well, it makes it cheaper for businesses to add the jobs, but only a little bit. 6% of a person's salary is fairly modest. And some ask, you know, how do we know this tax break goes to the new hires anyway? Dean Baker, a labor expert at the Center for Economic and Policy Research, says even in a down economy, employers are going to be hiring and firing plenty of workers.
Most of those 4 million people who'd get hired every month anyhow would qualify for this tax credit. So we'd in effect be giving employers money for something they'd be doing anyhow.
The bill's passed the House already. If the Senate approves, the president says he'll sign it.
All right. Richard DeKayser, is the Fed watching what's going on with this jobs bill?
You bet it is. Whenever the Fed's setting interest rates and generally conducting monetary policy, they're looking out with a 1 to 2 year view. That includes fiscal policy. So tax policy is very much on the Fed radar screen. They've got excellent intelligence as to the shape of the bill and its probabilities of passing. So to be sure, this is factored into their decision-making.
Richard DeKayser, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Marketplace's John Dimsdale reporting from Washington as well. John, thanks.
Thank you.
Listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Wednesday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, 2010, at marketplace.org. Well, over in Europe, Greece is battling with one of the biggest budget deficits in the world. Neighboring countries are being asked to bail them out, but now the government in Athens might have a partial solution, a fire sale of state-owned property. From London, Marketplace Europe correspondent Stephen Beard reports.
The government still dominates the Greek economy and so has an amazing range of assets to sell. It's putting a curious ragbag of goodies on the block. A handful of jumbo jets, a casino, some banks, and most bizarrely, the Organization for Prognostication on Soccer Matches. That body runs the lucrative business of betting on sports. The first chunk of state-owned assets is expected to raise 2.5 billion euros. There are many more things the government could sell, but, says commentator John Serapoulos, it won't be taking up a German suggestion and offloading some of its scenic islands.
If you're going to pay off a large chunk of your 300 billion euros with sales of such islands, you're going to have to sell dozens or hundreds, and that wouldn't go down terribly well.
Another half-joking suggestion is that Greece cash in on its cultural heritage, charging companies for the use of names from Greek mythology, for example, Nike, the goddess of victory. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
When Porsche and BMW release earnings today, we're going to get a peek at the state of the luxury car market. Now, the auto industry as a whole has started getting better, and people are starting to buy fancy cars again. But as Marketplace's Elisa Roth tells us, it's all a matter of perspective.
When the recession was at its worst, nobody was buying cars, especially fancy ones. Alan Baum is an auto industry analyst. He says that's starting to change, slowly.
We're talking about a recovery that's more modest, perhaps slightly better than the overall market, but not dramatically.
He says, for one thing, car makers are leasing again. Leases are a good deal for people who always want that new car smell and trade in and up often. But even if the market is improving, it's still much worse than it was in 2008. And the luxury cars people are buying are quite different.
Smaller vehicles, still having that level of style, but not necessarily quite as ostentatious.
He says car makers are trying to accommodate that change in taste, making vehicles like SUVs and crossovers that are more versatile. As for the super high-end, the Maseratis and Lamborghinis, he says that market's going to take even longer to recover. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Next month, new EPA rules kick in to reduce contamination from lead paint during home renovations. And a lot of home remodelers are crying foul. Today in Washington, they're asking for more time to ramp up training and avoid hefty penalties. From the Entrepreneurship Desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman reports.
As of April 22nd, carpenters, painters, and others who work on homes built before 1978 will have to be certified to deal with old lead paint, or face a fine topping $37,000 a day.
We don't think the EPA has done a very good job of getting ready for it.
David Steele is president of the Window Gallery in Augusta, Georgia. He says EPA has provided lead safety training to just a fraction of contractors who need this type of certification to do remodeling.
With the new construction industry already on its last legs, the one bright light is the remodeling side of things. And if work has to stop on two-thirds of the housing stock, this should be delayed.
We can't use these economic issues as reasons for not moving forward with a law that will ultimately prevent many kids from becoming permanently impaired.
That's Rebecca Morley of the National Center for Healthy Housing. She cites EPA figures saying compliance will add just $35 to a typical home renovation. Contractors say the cost is more likely to be in the hundreds. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Seems like it's so different these days traveling by air. That plane ticket no longer means you get a meal or a pillow for free. And then there are the baggage fees. Some in the airline industry say those have led to unintended consequences, and they're looking to Congress for help. Marketplace's Rico Galliano reports.
What happens when airlines charge people to check their bags? According to flight attendants, people just carry more bags onto the plane. Bill McGlashan is with the AFA, America's largest flight attendants union.
We're seeing more bags and we're seeing larger bags. They may not want to pay the fee, so they're trying to bring them all on board. and it's simply causing chaos in the cabin.
The AFA recently conducted a survey of attendants on 22 different airlines. 80% of them reported overhead bins, overstuffed with heavy bags, are causing injury to attendants and to passengers.
They identified seeing on a daily basis passengers being hit on the head, passengers tripping.
All of which led the AFA this week to call for Congress to pass a bill called the Securing Cabin Baggage Act. It would do two things: set a maximum size for any carry-on bag, and force the TSA to make sure extra or oversized bags never make it past security checkpoints.
No, it wouldn't work.
Christopher Elliott is the reader advocate for National Geographic Traveler magazine, and while he says the number one cause of fights on planes is scarce luggage space, he's not sure this bill is the best way to solve the problem.
The TSA is screening people for security. You cannot expect a TSA agent to count bags.
The airlines oppose the bill, too. They say since every plane has different storage bin sizes, one mandatory carry-on size will not fit all. So what's the solution? Chris Elliott has a suggestion.
You have to go back to allowing people to check at least one bag for free.
But with the airlines earning billions from bag fees, Elliott admits that change may be slow in coming. In Los Angeles, I'm Rico Galliano for Marketplace.
While those airlines have been battling it out over fees, airports are also going after one another over passenger fees. San Francisco is out with a YouTube video that shows a light and airy terminal building with short lines and happy passengers. They refer to its competition as the bad airport, with sad-looking souls sifting through broken luggage at baggage claim. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.